What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday.
I do want a really good half par hole in the first six holes, whether that is a half shot under par or a half shot over par. I think it's mentally a really good thing to face on the opening six holes.
Well, shit, if you pull AK out of the, you know, abyss of Mars that he's been in for the last 12 years, like, I would be interested. I would watch. And here we are.
I think it's such a consequential stretch of holes that's really overlooked is like to who wins the golf tournament. If you can play that 7 through 12 and a couple under par or even par, you're going to probably have a chance if you're anywhere near on Sunday. If you play that stretch of holes even or under par, like I'll buy you a drink. Like it is such an achievement.
Hello, America. Hope everybody's having a good day. This is the Tie Podcast, but we have a three ball today, which I'm very excited about. Trey Wren is in the building. Welcome, Trey. How are you?
What's going on? I'm well. I'm glad to be here and glad to chop it up with you guys here on Mudball Monday.
I'm also joined by Henry Shimp. Henry, how are you?
I'm great. I'm shorting the Hello America call. If you recall, we are the top podcast, the top golf podcast in China. So hello, China, I think would be more apropos to the episode.
Hello to all the Aussies. Hello to all the Europeans. This is a global pod. Today we're going to be talking our favorite six hole stretches in competitive golf. A lot can happen in six holes. Matches switch, feelings change, and a new test awaits with each six hole stretch. But before we get into the action, we've got a quick sporty dirt since we've got three of us here today headed your way. And I'll lead us into that. Drink of the week this week is kombucha, like by far. I've had more kombucha, I think, this week than I've had all year. And I need to revisit the elderberry topic because we gave elderberry so much shit a couple weeks ago. It's a little bit spicy. It's a little bit different. Big Blue gets a lot of love around here. I feel like elderberry is kind of a second cousin. And it's been quickly redeeming itself. I've had a few others. Not going to call out any brands, but like Golden Pineapple, very, very good. I had a mango one. Just got my hands on a lot of Booch lately, so enjoying myself. By the way, anybody in the DMs have any favorite Booch brands? Send them my way. Anxious to try them out. I'm on a little bit of a kick. Henry Shimp is a big Booch guy. I think he's got something for us.
Well, you're going to have to order it. It's only in the Carolinas, but I have to have mentioned it to you before. Dolly Sophia. Have you had Dolly out of Charleston?
I've only had the Bucci Main, which is just a wonderful, wonderful name. And it's really good. But I'll give it another run.
It's formally ruined kombucha for me. I can only drink it. I only drink kombucha when I'm in the Carolinas, which is not very frequent anymore. But it's so damn good. Like I respect GT Dave's. It's good stuff. All the other brands. But I try them and it's just not the same. So anyway, on you go to the eating.
Speaking of kicks, Henry and I were texting this week, getting into some Smashburgers. We are recording here on Saturday. Sunday, I've got some miles to run. So after the half marathon finishes up, it's basically straight to the alcohols and the Smashburgers. So I will keep you heavily posted on what transpires on Sunday afternoon. I think Henry's going to join me. We'll definitely be throwing some stuff on the stories. I mean, you know the deal. It's Martin's potato buns. It's thinly shaved onion. It's yellow mustard. It's American cheese. It's 80-20 beef, hard sear, a lot of salt, pickles. I mean, you just can't beat that sort of thing. So
it's game
that's
on.
That's what we're going to be getting into. Henry's got
it on hand. Had it on hand.
I ordered a fucking smasher right here. So you're
I'll tell you
in
what.
Tough spot.
I'm gonna chime on the burgers. I am a stickler for I want my burger to look like a sheet of paper if possible.
Yes.
I like
yes.
a thin burger. Even like I almost prefer like a frozen food service like Sysco burger to a restaurant steakhouse burger, which some people think I'm insane for. I never order a burger at a restaurant because it might come out like an inch thick, and I just don't want to eat that. So I'm a smash burger guy only if I can
Trey,
help it.
A burger is not a steak. If you want a burger medium, let's say, you should have a steak. If you want a burger, you want the old Maillard reaction. And you only get that if you're going paper thin. You know, if you're Henry, you head to Crate and Barrel and just buy yourself a smasher. I'm using my palm.
I can't believe you had that on.
What the fuck goes to Crate and Barrel? You ever heard of Amazon?
Amazon.
It's $1.99.
Hey, I got to keep it thrifty. Moving on to reading this week. We're keeping it at quote of the week to keep things short. I got into some more Bob Rotella. I have not read one of Rotella's books, of which I think I've read most of them, all of them. But I got into Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. This week, it's a book. It's like one of the first golf books I ever read. And this line hit me in the face, which is people by and large become what they think about themselves. It was like one of the first lines. I had it underlined and a double exclamation mark. And he went on basically to say, like, you live what you paint, you know, like the world is your picture. And if you constantly paint negative, photos or renderings in front of yourself, you're just going to end up living those out. And on the same token, if you visualize great things, you'll likely achieve them. So really enjoyed getting into that book again. And then theme of the week, I've got a couple here. The first is just back to the basics, man. Grip, stance. Every time you try and add stuff and layer stuff on top of that in order to get better, if you neglect those things, you're going backwards, or you're definitely staying stagnant. It's really, really hard to level up when you neglect the basics. So, for me, like there are half a dozen things, but sleep and exercise, you neglect those two things and you'll fall flat on your face pretty fast. So I had to check myself there this week. Second thing, more on like a Mudball Monday sort of note, is that I've seen a lot of poorly designed bathrooms lately. My eye for sink architecture is wide ass open. And so I've been
so
kind of
going on these days.
I've been documenting this in my phone. It's kind of an ongoing process. I think I'm going to write a fucking newsletter about it in the coming months once I accumulate enough evidence. So I look forward to displaying that to all of you.
I have a request for that newsletter. If you can use as many golf architecture terms in the bathroom, if you can somehow use the word Redan.
Punch bowl, Redan, double plateau, Beerits. There's certainly some
like
Beerits designs.
Landforms, saddle, ravine, maybe.
There's so much to get into.
My goodness.
That'll be a fun one to riff on. But here we go. I'm tossing Mudball Monday, dirt, whatever, back to I'm gonna toss it to Trey, then Henry, and then we'll get into the episode. Trey, what you got?
I'm gonna keep mine super brief. Drinking, I really only drink, if we're talking about drinks, I only drink tequila or wine, and I try and drink high quality in both of those departments, but I drink a lot of water if I'm not drinking drinks. But today I actually have two smoothies, which is kind of crazy. I have a protein smoothie and a fruit smoothie, because I wanted the peanut butter protein smoothie, and I also wanted one that tastes really good, so I went with two smoothies for some reason. Eating, I've been eating a lot of Mexican food recently. I might have said that the last time we were on, which would be insane, because I don't know why I would say that twice, but I've been eating a lot of Mexican food down here in South Florida. I've been reading, this is going to sound silly, but my own words a lot. I've been writing scripts and rewriting scripts and writing like outlines of documentaries. And I don't really read much apart from, well, I just read the Golfer's Journal. That was the last real, like, actual thing I read. But other than that, I've been reading what I've been writing and then rewriting and rewriting all week, and thinking. I'm just, especially when I talk to you guys and we just played golf last weekend, I'm thinking about content ideas, ways we can work together, trips we can go on. That's kind of at the top of my mind right now, is like thinking about, you know, later this year, next year, like what are we going to get into? That's what's on my mind. We can circle back to that later, but that's all I've got. That's my quick dirt.
Curious, in the reading category, you mentioned you've been reading a lot of your own words. Are you at liberty to tell us what you've been working on?
Yes, I've been finishing up my documentary for the West Palm Golf Park. I put a trailer out to some close friends yesterday, which was a big step because I haven't finished the movie yet, and I made a trailer, so that's always a shot in the dark. But that's what I've been working on the most, and just high point content, high point communications, and then the West Palm Golf Park documentary, which will be called Let's Build a Golf Park. It's just like the story of how it all came together. I've been working on it for almost 3 years. So it's a long time, not constant work. It's just kind of stopping in and documenting, but it's a long time coming, and I'm pretty pumped to finally put that out to the world.
All right, I'll get into it. Got a Topo Chico on hand at the moment. Last night was dabbling in a little finger of bourbon. Had some poker games going, and I think it's important to, like, you got to set the vibe, not in terms of like getting hammered, but got to set the vibe in terms of, if you're the only guy at a poker table not drinking, people think you're just like taking yourself way too seriously. They're going to read into it. If you want to have a successful night, you got to have at least a little something. So I was just kind of sipping on a little bourbon. I can't recall what it was, but it was some good stuff. Anyway, that's all there. I'll move on to my eating. Salmon, been hammering the salmon lately. You know, I've been talking in the self about the road to 200. I've had a realization that just it's the last like 5, 6, 7 pounds. It's tough. It's like, it is tough. And I've been eating too much venison, chicken, just too many lean meats. I don't want to like hammer pork and steak all the time. I like pork and steak. But salmon to me is a little bit more sustainable business model on the fattier protein side. So I've been incorporating probably 3-ish salmon nights a week. I'm a crispy skin guy till I die. So it's in the pan, like ripping hot for about 3 or 4 minutes. And then, so the big thing here, I get a nice large fillet and I cut it down the middle, because if you get just a big flat fillet, you can't then flip it on its sides and do all four sides. So I cut it. So then I have two smaller fillets. Then I can go skin side about 4 minutes, either side about 30 seconds, and then finish it off on the non-skin side, but the long flat one, for, you know, probably 30 or 45 seconds there. And that is it. Kind of some barbecue-y rub, and then also some Hattie B's dry seasoning. Nice barbecue-y, spicy salmon. Just been absolutely crushing that. So that's my eating. Moving on to my reading a biography by John Feinstein on David Faraday this week, which has been really good. Faraday, you know, really interesting and, you know, somewhat tragic life, dare I say. But the quote of the week from the book, I think it's fairly well known that he won the Scottish Open back in the day and lost the trophy. I mean, it's not the claret jug, but like a multiple 100-year-old trophy. And he loses the thing in the post-tournament celebrations. The quote is, he wakes, I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have the exact thing on hand, but he wakes up 48 hours later saying, you know, feel great, like shocked that I slept that well. Well, he realized that he'd been sleeping for 2 days straight in a bunker of a golf course, 50 miles away from the golf course where he won the thing, and was woken up by the Led Zeppelin manager saying, we've lost the trophy, have no idea where it is, you know, hope you figure this one out, brother. So a little insight into David Faraday there. Wow. Moving on to my thinking. So we're on Saturday afternoon. This will release Monday morning. This will be old news at that point. But my God, the brother's 54. We got AK pegging it in Jetta this week. And Walker, you and I had a conversation like early on in the live proceedings about, it's like, what the hell can they do to actually make this thing interesting? Like what would make me care? And as a complete pisser throwaway, I think one of us said like, well, shit, if you pull AK out of the, you know, abyss of Mars that he's been in for the last 12 years, like I would be interested. I would watch. And here we are. So three of us are going to be together this weekend. The Liv boys are going to be in Jeddah, and I will be watching Liv Golf. I can guarantee you that. Might have to download the CW, might have to fire up YouTube. But all bets are off, honestly, in terms of how many people might watch. I mean, I think that a lot of their worst streams have been 15, 20K. Some of their best ones have been, you know, pushing low six figures. I mean, shit, if you told me right now that 2 million people tune in this weekend, that might be absurd, but I would believe it, frankly. I mean, if you're a golf fan and you're not going to watch AK, God, goodness, it's going to be some fun stuff. So that's what I've been thinking about. And with that, I will kick it to Mr. Dr. Professor Walker Simas to start us off with his six holes.
Psyched to see AK. Yeah, I totally agree. All right, here's the deal. We've each picked a golf course. I've got holes 1 through 6. Trey has holes 7 through 12. Henry has holes 13 through 18. And we'll kind of hit the following points. We're going to talk about what factors make each six-hole stretch good. And I think we need to cover what makes 1 through 6, 7 through 12, 13 through 18 good in general. But obviously, these courses each kind of present their own flavor of what makes each six-hole stretch good. And I think it's important to talk about individually what makes them good. I'm going to start off today With Pinehurst number two, we're going to talk about really a name. We're going to name our six hole stretch and then what could make it slightly better. So let's get into it. When talking competitive golf, whether watching or competing, I want an opening stretch to do a couple things for me. I want it to kind of reduce the field to the big boys by rewarding good shots and exposing bad ones. And I think that's a pretty standard point there. This stretch at Pinehurst number two certainly does that. The second thing I want is I want an opening hole that you can make birdie or bogey on. And we'll revisit hole number one later on in a few minutes. But one thing I love about the first hole at Pinehurst number two is that you need three really good ones to make a birdie, but you only need one bad one to make a bogey. And I think that's a really good thing to have on a first hole. It's like not a handshake, especially in US Open conditions. But it's not like anything's preventing you against making three if you make three solid golf shots. I do want a really good half par hole in the first six holes, whether that is a half shot under par. And I know people have different definitions on this, or a half shot over par. I think it's mentally a really good thing to face on the opening six holes, because if that's not something you're used to or comfortable with, you can have to grapple with that. It's also a great opportunity. Henry kind of introduced the term mental strokes gained. I think half par holes are a great opportunity to kind of, you know, take on a golf shot, gain some strokes on the field, and nudge your way in there for the last holes. Another thing I want in the opening six holes is I want a shot, one single shot that requires full commitment, where you basically don't have an out, where you have to look at it, acknowledge the fear and what can go wrong and say, fuck that. I'm fully committing and I'm pulling this shot off. And I think you've got a few here. You've definitely got, I would say the sixth for that would be the one where you're looking at 221. You've got to hit a really nice long iron. And by and large, in tournament conditions, you've got to land it basically on a blanket if you want it to hold the green, regardless of pin position. So, extra comments regarding this opening stretch at Pinehurst number two. I like the fact that it has a par three, a par four, and a par five. I think that's a bonus. I didn't really look into how many other great opening six hole stretches also have that, but the fact that it does, I like that a lot. Going deeper on that, three are birdieable, I think. That would be the first. You can birdie the first, the third. And then let's say that the fifth is a par five. I know they played it for a four in the US Open, but
they played a five.
Yeah, that would be a birdie hole. And then lastly, to kind of wrap up my first point on the opening six at Pinehurst number two, I think every single hole, one, two, three, four, five, and six, they all require a clear thinking and a really good understanding of like what shots you do have. Because you go out there, you don't have to have everything buttoned up, but you need to have a really good understanding of what shots you can pull off and what shots you can't. And that's something that Pinehurst number two does really well in general. Now, if I had to give the opening six holes at Pinehurst number two a name, this is kind of an inside joke, but I would name it Big First Third, because that is really what it is. It feels like stand-up comedy to me in a way. Or like if you bring the right energy and you take care of your prep and you're confident in your jokes, you can arrive at the seventh tee in a really good spot. Like you can have the best night ever up on stage. But if you're a little bit nervous, if you fare to deliver, it is bomb season. By the time you reach the seventh tee, like you're fucking done. Just enjoy your walk into the clubhouse because you will not be placing or hoisting a trophy. It will let you know if you're not ready to take on the golf course by the end of the sixth hole. And then where do I think the opening stretch at Pinehurst number two could be slightly better? I guess first I want to look at what's missing, if anything, and what is there at Pinehurst number two is really good. And I don't know if either of y'all have thought about this playing number two, but I wish that number one was a little bit more like of a 3.5 hole. Open up the right side a little bit, entice people to take driver. Don't have to change the green at all.
you know, give people that kind of gnarly 45-yard pitch that I love so much for a chance to really to make three more often. That is the only thing. I mean, I think two is a fantastic hole, three through six. There's really, you look at it hard and there's just not a lot to change. So that would really be the only thing that I would mess with. Before we move on to Trey's bit, anything there on Pinehurst number two?
I'll add a couple comments on, you know, you mentioned half pars. I think that's a really good call out. I think four and five at Pinehurst is one of the best examples I know of yeah, those are both kind of half pars, but like, I just think of that as like, it's a par nine, right? Like holes four and five, it's nine shots to get it around, you know?
That's right.
Four can be a 540 into the wind par four, and five can then all of a sudden be a 580 downwind down the hill par five. And so par can become rather irrelevant on each of those holes. I think the only thing I don't like about the fifth hole is like, just please nix the two longest tee boxes. Like they have a couple that are at 620 and 660 or something like that. And if you catch it into the wind, it's just like, you want people to be thinking about going for that green. That's what makes that hole really good, is you get on the downslope, you have like a two or a three iron in your hand. You think you can pull off the shot. It just gets dicey as shit, but you play from 660 and you can't even get down the hill. Guys are just laying up. The hole's significantly less interesting, and frankly, I think easier from super long. So I wish they would just get rid of those two boxes altogether. Yeah, I think part of what makes these holes so great is, like you called out, one and three is being potentially birdie opportunities, which is true, but like you get a little bit off the mark on either of those and you're very quickly reeling to make bogey. So it's, yeah, if you don't have your big boy pants on, Walker, just as you put it, you did a great job with that. Like, if you're not ready to strike real shots, I'm not talking like groove low, half straight. No, like you better be catching the ball middle of the face, well struck, well intended iron shots and drives early and often if you want to get off to a good start at Pinehurst. So good selection there. Shocker, the deucer, delivering good, as always.
Good, good, good stuff. Trey's going to take us through 7 through 12. And I'm curious what course you got, Trey.
So we're going to go through the middle. I had a couple in mind. I wanted Marion, but we had a discussion with Henry, and then the holes after my stretch at Marion are undeniably better. But regardless, I think that the setup stretch at Marion is so good. And that's kind of what I'm calling the middle of the golf course. Brooks Koepka had that famous quote, however long ago. He's like, I'm just bored out there from holes 6 through 14, which is a little outside of my zone, 7 through 12. But I've picked Augusta, and one, just because we know so much about it. But two, I think it's such a great middle setup stretch of holes, as where, like, you, if you can get some help from the architecture and from the golf holes itself to kind of keep you engaged, that's very helpful. And I think that's exactly what they do. It kind of alternates hard and easy holes until you get to the back end of the stretch, when it's really just kind of setting you up for that finish. I think it's such a consequential stretch of holes that's really overlooked, is like, to who wins the golf tournament. If you can play that 7 through 12 and a couple under par or even par, you're going to probably have a chance if you're anywhere near on Sunday. But it really kind of like weeds out people. 10, 11, even 12. I think 12 might be the most consequential hole in the whole back nine, because it really sets the tone. Like, Jordan Spieth lost the tournament there. We've seen people lose the tournament there. It's like a quote unquote easy little shot on paper, it's an easy shot that can be so tough. So that's kind of what I'm looking for in a middle stretch, is like, keep my attention up either with hard holes or easy holes. Augusta has both. Like I said, it really just sets you up for the finishing stretch. Like, how do you play that middle is going to determine if you have a chance, or if you're in front, or if you're now chasing. And I think at Augusta specifically, the course gets significantly easier after 12. So those guys can just go and finish and go make, you know, like what Schwartzel did, birdie the last four holes. Like, you don't have a chance to do that unless you can survive the middle. So I don't have a name. I kind of forgot about that, to be honest. So I'm gonna have to pass on the name. I don't want to just throw out a bad one. I don't know if you guys have one that would be good, but I dropped the ball on the name of those holes. Obviously, like 12 starts Amen Corner, so I can't. You're not even gonna use that, but I don't have a name. But I think that's really what I'm looking for, and I'll run through them just kind of one by one. Seven, I've been there, and I can't even think of what seven is. The sixth hole is one of my favorite holes in the world, and then I kind of just mentally skipped to the back nine from there. So
seven's probably the worst hole on the course. It's a straightaway. Green is fantastic.
I wrote weakest hole on the golf course, but I just can't remember it. I've walked down it. I don't remember it. And so I know it's a long par four, but I think it's a pretty inconsequential hole. So kind of skipping over that one. Eight is such a great par five. Some of the deepest bunkers I've ever seen. Some guys can get there. Some guys can't. It depends on the wind, but that's a big hole where I feel like all the horses always play that hole well. And if you make par there, or even forbid bogey there, like you're not going to have a chance. Nine is a good hole. I feel like a lot of guys birdie that hole, especially guys who are playing well, always seem to birdie nine. And then 10 and 11 are just hard. Like I can't hook the ball, and 10, I don't know what I would hit off the 10th hole. And 11 is just white knuckle, hit a golf shot. If you want to hit the green, you have to take on some risk. I think that's such a good, tough hole. And then 12 is just grab your nuts and hit a good one, because that's right there. If you can get through 12, you have a chance. If you hit it in the water, obviously, unless you have a massive lead, like you're not going to be on the podium. So that's kind of my analysis of those holes. And that's what I've got for you.
It's kind of like the hold the line stretch.
Yeah.
To put a name to it. Cause like you're so right about seven and eight. What is seven? I don't know. Part of me thinks it could be the best hole in the golf course if they did something to it, but I don't know what I would do. Eight's amazing. But once you get into 10, 11, like 12, you can lose a golf. You can lose a golf tournament right there.
Yeah. You have to, I like that. Hold the line. You have to play those three holes, even par or better, if you want to have any chance, I think.
Yeah.
I love the word consequential you leaned on there. You know, the fact that the middle of the round, it's not just kind of keep it rolling, see what happens, see if you can gain one, lose one. It's like, no, you can gain a couple, but you can also completely shoot yourself out of it there. And so, yeah, having consequence in the middle of the round is
and you'll see that on the leaderboard, where like you'll have a guy who's up in front play that stretch poorly, and you'll have somebody play at 3 under, and they go from, you know, 10th to second and vice versa. So like, I think that's where a lot of motion happens before it really starts getting tight at the end. It's, you can almost kind of relax in that stretch, which I think is why it's so good that there's hard holes and easy holes. Cause if you relax on either of those holes, you're probably not making birdies and you're probably not making pars. So
the other thing I'll bring up is I was reading Rotella, as I mentioned in Dirt. And there was a one-liner in there. I think it was Tom Watson quote, but he was just talking about being confidently patient. And a lot of golf really is that, especially when you get into the echelon where you're winning championships. And it's like, you know, you get four spins around that place. You've got to face, let's just call it 10, 11, 12, four times. And, you know, a lot of guys, you watch the Masters every year, a lot of guys bogey 10 and 11. And it's like, if you can just, you know, make some 7-footers and grind out those pars, that goes such a long way over the course of the week. Confidently patient. So,
I like it.
Henry, what you got?
It's almost one of those stretches you got to think about. Last comment here, that if you get through it even, you've done just fine. You know, and so you almost have to think of it as like a ledger of, okay, so if I par the seventh, I birdie eight, and I par nine, I'm doing fine. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to like lean into the 10th, lean into the 11th. If you're one under, you bogey 11, you step up on the 12th tee, it's not let's get one back right here, especially to that Sunday pin. It's like cat style, middle of the green, two putt, get out of there. You have done your job, right? Like you've made it through them. I'm almost thinking of it as like a 24-hour ultra marathon. You know, you start in the middle of the day, you do 8 hours, and then you got to run through the night. And that's the night time. Yeah, making it through 7 through 12. And if you can make through the night, then you'll be all right the next day. So, all right, we're wrapping up here with holes 13 through 18 at Marion. This is like, there's such a shitty name, especially since those holes already have a pretty clear name, right? Like you've got the drama of the first, I think they go, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's 6, 7 through 13 usually considered, and then 14 through 18 that people have named the holes at Marion. But so you have the drama of the first six, the comedy in the shorter 7th through 13th holes, and then the tragedy of 14 through 18 where it gets really difficult. So we'll lump the 13th in here, and I'm just going to call it crossing the Rhine, because once you cross the road, once again, it's like, you know, the famous World War II battle. It's on. It's time to really pony up here. What makes these holes so great, and this is just a microcosm of Marion itself, of why it's so great, is that you have so much variety in those final six holes. It's difficult. There is an opportunity to score on the 13th. But you know, you're looking at two par threes and four par fours. One of the par threes is literally, it maxes at 125, 130 yards, and oftentimes it's significantly shorter than that. And then the other par three in the 17th maxes at 260, 270. I mean, it's like a monster hole. You know, the par fours, the first one in the 14th is a dogleg to the left. The second one, direct dogleg to the right. 16, obviously just like an amazingly cool hole hitting over the quarry. And then the 18th is just your quintessential monster 520-yard finisher. So I think it's just the variety, the challenge, the number of different types of shots that you have to hit down the stretch there. Once you cross that road, I mean, it's one of the best stretches of holes of golf in the world. If someone were to call out 10 better stretches of holes, I'd be hard pressed to think they know what they're talking about, because I cannot think of more than one or two, if that, frankly. When I think about, you know, what could potentially make these holes better, I'll call out two things. This is a rogue thought, but it's what comes to me. So Marion famously has two par fives, holes two and holes four. And you don't get one after the fourth hole. You don't get one in the end. I think it could provide some interesting variety to have a par five in there. Now, obviously, it's not 13. 14, not going to happen. 15, not going to happen. 17 and 18 are what they are. This is a crazy thought, and there's literally zero real estate to make it happen, so it wouldn't. But if 16, you could somehow, like, you know, burn a couple houses down back there and lengthen that hole by 100 yards, it would be really, really cool to have a super interesting tee shot down there. If you miss the fairway, you're clearly not going for it. But if you hit the fairway, say you're out, you know, 250, 260, do you pull that long iron and try to hit it up over the quarry, or do you lay up, leave yourself 120 yards, 100 yards, and play your third from there? I think that's an interesting candidate for a hole to potentially be a par five. But like I said, I mean, you're literally all the way up against the road back to the neighborhood. That it would never happen. But it's kind of interesting to think about. And I would love to see a par five in there just purely for the variety of the pars. The other thing that I'll call out, if you recall in the 2013 US Open where Team Rose took the dub, the 18th, once you push it to about 500, 515, that tee box that they put in all the way back behind the cart path, they carved it out of the long grass there. If you have a four iron into that hole under US Open conditions, like, you literally can't even hit that green with the pitch of the front of it and then the way that it runs away on the back. And Walker, you and I have talked about this a lot in the context of Oakmont, that you'll have some of these old courses that are so revered, and it's like, well, hey, by the way, like, this fairway, like, you're not going to be able to hit it because that's just kind of how it works. And I'm immediately someone that's going to react with just why. Like, why do we have to say, well, that's how it's always been, so surely you just, you know, you can't hit it. That's kind of how I feel about the 18th green at Marion. Like, why does it have to be essentially unhittable? Justin Rose hit like as good of a four iron as you can possibly hit into that hole. I mean, it was just beautiful. And it still ran over into the back up against the rough. He put that three wood up there. But I think that's one slight edit I would make to it, is like just something small done to the green to where the 18th is a little bit more of an objective test, where there's like, clearly there's still a large advantage to being in the fairway, but I want to see guys who hit the fairway say, okay, I'm still 200, 210 out, but like I can hit a six iron up there and have a putt at birdie, not like, well, I'll do my best, but realistically, I'm just going to be chipping from over the green. So that's a very small nitpick. The 16th is a complete dream that would never happen. But those are the only two things I can think of with the end of the course there at Marion. So
Trey,
really
anything
strong
on,
closing stretch.
Trey, anything on the 18th at Marion? I have a small little take here, but wondering if you do as well.
Yeah, I definitely. And that kind of got me thinking, because I feel like that's a problem that is purely when they're using that really, really deep box. Like I played there from the back members tee and I had 100 yards in at the 18th. Like I went all the way down that hill. So like, but if I was playing in a USGA event there and I had to hit that club in, I would be quite frustrated. So I totally see what you're saying, but I've never experienced it like that. I mean, I've played it a few times, but I've hit like a, I think at most like a six or seven iron in there, because it's just not a 530 yard hole, but it's 360 days a year. But I agree with you completely. A 16 would be so cool as a par five. The quarry would be much more of a factor. I'm sure it is for like higher handicappers that are just purely mishitting shots. They just, you know, scuff one in there. But I think for us, it's like, it's more of just a piece of eye candy than it is an actual thought in your head. At least I mean, I don't know. I've never even come close to hitting a ball in there, and it's, that would be really cool, because if you have a three wood in your hand, you might hit it down there, and then what do you do? Like, that'd be a really cool hole, but obviously not going to happen. But yeah, that's kind of what I got for those two holes.
Yeah, with 16, and I think the only one of the three who hasn't played Marion. 16 before the restoration was really gnarly.
Yeah,
a lot of bushes down there and things where you're probably just not going to find your ball. It looks like today, you know, you're going to find your ball. You're just not going to like what you have to deal with.
It's a really hard shot. Yeah, it would be like probably sitting in some sandy like grass, and you just have a wall in front of you. Yeah, that would be no fun.
Not good. And then talking about 18, you know, I've always had this idea of, and there aren't many of these, and I understand why. I'm about to get into it, of a par five that's the length of a long par four, very, very reachable, but really does play to a five. This is not a half par hole, where reaching the green is, you know, for good players, a certainty, but around the green is so treacherous that you most likely are going to end up taking two shots, like a ball rolls back to your feet. Obviously, you don't have that kind of undulation with the 18th at Marion, but Henry, I agree with you that that green's a little bit messed up, could definitely be tweaked. And it got me thinking, like, it's the sort of distance that you would want for that kind of concept. It just doesn't have, you know, an elevated green surrounded by a ton of short grass or anything like that. It doesn't seem like a realistic change that could be made, but do either of you guys know the par off the top of your head of what Marion would play? Is it a 70 in tournament?
It's a 70, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be interesting to see Marion as a 71, make it more difficult, but, you know, tighten some things up around the green on the 18th and have 18 play as a five, you know, with the goal of not having the... you know, the average score on the hole be manipulated all that much. So, yeah, that's kind of where I sit on that. That was a really fun conversation. I love talking about not just golf holes, but I think this is applicable for people who, you know,
I've
these three courses really well.
I was going to say, I have one more thought about the stretch at Marion, just because I've played that more than the other courses that we're talking about. I've obviously never been to Augusta, but I never played Augusta, but I feel like when you cross the road at Marion, like whatever you're at, that is now your floor. Like that's like, if you cross the road two over, you're like, all right, 72 is now the objective. Like that's the best we're going to do. Cause like, you're just going to make, if you play that stretch of holes, even or under par, like, I mean, I'll buy you a drink. Like it is such an achievement. And I feel like every time I played there, that's been what's happened. Like, I think I've played them even par one time. I shot even that day and I crossed the road at even par, birdied 13, bogeyed 17 or 18. And it's just like, it's just, you got to just hang on to your hat. That's such a, like, even the holes aren't even that hard. It's just like, you're going to make, some of them are very hard, but you're just going to make bogeys in that stretch of holes. And like, if you're, whatever you cross the road at, you're hopefully going to finish there, probably a couple worse.
Do you cross the road at 12? Like when you finish 12 green?
After the 12th. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that they now, if I recall the last time I was there, which is probably going on, it was after COVID. So probably 3 years ago. I believe they're now, and Trey, maybe you've been more recently and would know, they put a tunnel under the 12th. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it used to be that you did literally walk across the road. Now you walk.
Well, you cross it off of one and then
right.
You go underneath. Yeah. It's like down by the creek. Yeah.
So one, you do still walk across it to the second. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I feel like it actually had something to do with like the employee parking or something. They wanted to make it safer for the caddies and the employees that were going across the road. I don't know, but it doesn't really change much for like, you just go down and come right back up, but that's such a surreal, like, you come out of there, you see the clubhouse, you see that tiny little short par three, and it's game on.
It's really cool. Henry, well, I'll fill y'all in on what's coming after Wednesday, but Henry, fill us in on what people can expect coming their way this week, specifically on Wednesday.
We've got a writing piece that I have done on Crystal Downs, kind of a, you know, middle of the winter, like not a lot of golf to be played right now. What the hell are you going to do? Just write about golf that you have played, essentially. So that'll be coming to you in writing form on Wednesday. And for those of you who don't like to read, which we have gotten some feedback on, but it doesn't mean that we're going to stop, you know, hitting the keys, because I think it's an important exercise. Mm-hmm. That'll also be coming in YouTube form later in the week. So if you'd rather just listen to it, we'll release it as a podcast as well as a YouTube video if you want to see my not so beautiful face on the screen. And then Thursday, Walker has an episode coming with Jeff Marsh, a really high quality golf photographer. We'll have some stuff coming out prior to that episode of Jeff's work. If you haven't seen it already, you'll be pretty taken aback by the quality of photography that he's able to capture at professional golf events and elsewhere. So that was a fun conversation. And I think that's the content download for the week. The three of us are going to be together this coming weekend filming some stuff. And that'll be coming later on at an unspecified date. So
yeah, we'll see when that's going to drop. I've got a long board of edits that are going to be ahead of that, but yeah,
no,
it'll be cool when it comes out.
No promises on a quick turnaround, but it will turn around in eventuality. So
it'll be good. Not fast. That's my motto central at this point.
Central Florida, Cabot Citrus Farms.
Yeah.
Let's call it the Sticks Boys offsite. So we'll keep you posted on all the development.
It's going to be just a good time. You know,
worst case, it's going to be a good time. That's right. A little road trip. Henry's flying in. It'll be great. With that, we'll leave you to it. Happy Mudball Monday. That is. Enjoy your week. We will keep you posted with more content coming your way. Be well.
Thanks for having me, fellas.